Welcome back. Top of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast, this Tuesday, December 17th, 2019. Again, we'll be taking a break at RBN from live broadcasts next Tuesday and Wednesday, and the following Tuesday and Wednesday. So that's December 24th and 25th, December 31st and January 1st. So Christmas Eve, Christmas Day, New Year's Eve, and New Year's Day. And today I was trying to focus on heartwarming, Christmas-oriented or spirit-of-the-season stories. And so I've been doing that for the first 2 hours. I think I might maybe try to connect yesterday's broadcast a little bit with today's and the spirit of the season, if that's possible. I think it might be. I think there's a connection. And if there is, I think it's in Patrick Henry's words. I started reading his letter to Archibald Blair, January 8, 1799, and didn't get to the passage that I intended to, wherein Patrick Henry says, he describes the great pillars of all government and of social life, the armor that renders us invincible. And so I think that is a connection, and it's the same thing that should be front of mind today, in my humble estimation. I was thinking at the end of the second hour, I wonder if the natives are restless. I think I would be. Again, I can only speak for myself and from my perspective. I'm a man, and so I can imagine some of the guys are thinking, you know, this is great, but it's maybe a little too much, you know, whatever. Can we get back to the usual things? Maybe I can put them together a little bit. Anyway, Patrick Henry's letter to Archibald Blair, January 8, 1799, helps us remember. Yesterday I was talking about when we think about in terms of morality and ethics, those things don't change, regardless of what fancy new technology emerges on the scene, and there is an effort to basically separate man from his soul. And it seems a more direct effort than has ever been, or that we could ever argue has been, since at least, you know, what is seen in Genesis chapter 6 in particular. So keeping in mind that, you know, from a standpoint of morality and ethics, things don't change, or they shouldn't anyway. What guides our morality and our ethics, that shouldn't change. And again, it gets back to what I would call the definition of love that I read from 1 Corinthians chapter 13. That is what encourages the best in mankind. And after all, isn't that what the spirit of the season is all about? I hope so. So in keeping with that, tying some things together from yesterday, and maybe, you know, hopefully not drifting too far afield from the good stories that I want to focus on, spirit of the season kinds of stories. Patrick Henry's letter to Archibald Blair, January 8, 1799. Here's an excerpt. He wrote, beginning, "Your favor on the 28th of last month I have received. Its contents are a fresh proof that there is cause for lamentation over the present state of things in Virginia. It is possible that most of the individuals who compose the contending factions are sincere and act from honest motives. And this, I mentioned yesterday, is a reverberant theme throughout history. Isn't it interesting? You know, I think of Thomas Sowell's words, speaking of academics in particular, and how easily we can be beguiled, it seems. You know, I think of the words attributed to Adam Weishaupt, "O foolish man, what can you not be made to believe?" And so many folks who it seems that a certain academic pedigree lends itself to a certain brand of arrogance. And folks like Thomas Sowell have spoken to that. So it's interesting, you know, the more that you learn, I think the more that folks learn in this venue, at least for me, I guess I could speak for myself, the more I learn, the more I know I don't know. But the more that I see that the myth of accidental history is just that, it's a myth, and that there are, it should come as no surprise to anyone that certain people have tried to advance certain interests, and that once you understand that there are certain folks who are not shy about operating in very unscrupulous ways, then you start to kind of be on the lookout for those kinds of things, especially when, if those same people who are willing to, and very, very willing, not ashamed to act in very unscrupulous ways, can convince the rest of the general populace that, again, you know, paraphrasing Charles Baudelaire's words, the devil didn't exist, and that, you know, no one would do that. Would you do that? No. Well, you know, then we're all the same in that sense. No. Imagine how much more so, how gleefully someone would take advantage of those who remain naive to someone's unscrupulous character, if you can call it that, or lack thereof, perhaps. Anyway, so Patrick Henry writing to Archibald Blair saying it is possible that most of the individuals who compose the contending factions are sincere and act from honest motives. That's, I think, a relatable statement even today. Continuing, but it is more than probable that certain leaders meditate a change in government. To effect this, I see no way so practicable as dissolving the Confederacy. And I am free to own that in my judgment, most of the measures lately pursued by the opposition party directly and certainly lead to that end. If this is not the system of the party, they have none, and they have none, and act extempore. I do acknowledge that I am not capable to form a correct judgment on the present politics of the world. And again, this, you know, is a very humble statement Patrick Henry makes, and that most of us should make today. The wide extent to which the present contentions have gone will scarcely permit any observer to see enough in detail to enable him to form anything like a tolerable judgment on the final result, as it may respect the nations in general. But as to France, I have no doubt in saying that to her it will be calamitous. And, you know, so we're talking about the French Revolution and a virus, you know, the viral spread of a social trend in Malcolm Gladwell terms. And of course, you know, historians, there are many, I guess the way to put it is there are many historians who agree, and the facts seem to show that the French Revolution in particular was illuminized, so to speak. Her conduct has made it the interest of the great family of mankind to wish the downfall of her present government, because its existence is incompatible with that of all others within its reach. And whilst I see the dangers that threaten ours from her intrigues and her arms, I am not so much alarmed as at the apprehension of her destroying the great pillars of all government and of social life. I mean, virtue, morality, and religion. This is the armor, my friend, and this alone that renders us invincible. These are the tactics we should study. If we lose these, we are conquered, fallen indeed. In vain may France show and vaunt her diplomatic skill and brave troops, So long as our manners and principles remain sound, there is no danger. And that right there, I think you really, that's it in a nutshell. The great pillars of all government and of social life, virtue, morality, and religion. This is the armor. So long as our manners and principles remain sound, there is no danger. Admittedly, it's becoming, I think, more and more difficult year after year to... I remember saying 10 years ago, I had a conversation with my sister. Actually, I think it was about 11 years ago now. And after the subprime contagion, so-called, I remember going on a walk with her around this time of year, actually, the holiday season. And I just remember feeling like, you know, the times that were coming would be revealing. And I said, what is coming, you know, the time that's coming will reveal character. It's a time that will reveal character. And the reason for that is because when you see, you know, the increase of debt, for example, in the, during that mortgage boom, roughly, you know, 2003-04 to about 2008 or so, 7. There was a massive increase in debt and liquidity as a result, you know, mortgage debt, housing debt in particular. And so there were what you might call unfunded liabilities that were floating around. And so there's liquidity floating around. And the proliferation of liquidity created a state of, you know, sort of middle class drunken opulence. It's not really opulence, but, you know, people thought that things were great and it was always going to be that way for a short period of time. I think people got very comfortable and it was, in most cases, ill-gotten gain. But then suddenly that all came crashing down, but the liabilities, the unfunded liabilities were still there. The liquidity evaporated, it vanished as quickly as it arrived, because, you know, when you can create it out of a ledger entry, essentially you can, what man creates, he can take away. So, as I mentioned in the past, according to the SEC, $25 trillion in liquidity evaporated virtually overnight, $10 trillion in the U.S. alone, and that left those unfunded liabilities still there. It's like taking, the analogy that I always think of is, it's like taking fish out of your local lake and sticking them in your bathtub and spritzing them with a water bottle and saying it's the same thing. They're in this space and they have water, and so it's, no, it's not the same thing. So in the subsequent years, it seems that we have less time. That's really the big commodity, so to speak, that has taken a hit from all of the other encroachments. People have less time and are less apt, inclined, willing, able to engage in the sorts of efforts that are categorized by the last story that I told, the young man, Brett, you know, taking it upon himself in his own time to build a copy, an exact replica of the manger. And it's a little thing. And so what reward does he receive? But that's not why he does it. And so in these times, you know, it's interesting. There are echoes of history. And I think it's been a couple of years ago now, I was saying that people should be reading Solzhenitsyn's Gulag Archipelago for real life accounts of what life was like. And it's interesting, the revealing of character in these times. Now, you know, I think we're still sort of in this time where a lot of folks are clinging to the vestiges of middle-class life. And the reality of the Gulag Archipelago has not set in. And it's not always a bad thing, you know. Maybe it's the refiner's fire or the fuller's soap that gets us to set aside the petty and insignificant things, the tchotchkes, you know, the whiskey and beads, so to speak, that we've been beguiled with. It would be nice. You know, you look at what happened to the Russian peasantry, for example, and the middle class and the intellectual class. And how I would say they were a more stable group of people. And yet even, you know, what happened to them? I mean, that seems to me kind of what is happening in America, only in a more technocratic, digital, cybernetic sort of way. That was the crude analog version of what's happening in America today. And I don't think that America has the substance and the fortitude and the character those folks had. Certainly not today. I could be wrong, I admit, but so it seems to me. So anyway, if we hold to what's right and true, and I think that Patrick Henry has zeroed in on that, then I think there's hope. And you know, these stories that I will mention over these next few days leading up to Christmas, I think speak to that. You know, it speaks to the best in all of us. And so hopefully we can focus on that and celebrate that and not give in to the terminal cynicism that, well, I suffer from far too often. So to conclude, you know, that was the sentiment that Patrick Henry expressed that I think is a good reminder. The great pillars of all government and of social life, the armor that renders us invincible. He said, I mean, virtue, morality, and religion. So long as our manners and principles remain sound, there is no danger. And these times, you know, it is these kinds of times that make it abundantly clear, you know, when people are just locked into the inculcation of herdthink. And you try to say these things are destructive, you know, you try to stand apart, it just, you sound crazy to certain people, unfortunately. So it makes it, you know, it brings the reality home of how difficult that is, what Patrick Henry is expressing. And that doesn't seem to change from age to age, does it? Stick around, I'll be right back.
It happens more often than we can imagine. In my case, I was sitting at home, and out of nowhere, I just started feeling uncomfortable. Then it got worse, and I started perspiring. I tried to ignore it, but I waited too long. The chest pain came as we were driving to the hospital emergency. I felt my life clock begin to tick. I barely survived. There was lots of damage done to my heart. What do I do now? I was lucky. I took a leap of faith and tried a 7-herb formula with hawthorn, garlic, cayenne, and more called Extendivite. Herbs have been used for thousands of years to keep us healthy. If you're not using Extendivite as a preventative supplement, maybe it's time to start. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite. Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line, engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes, the flags go up, churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank, fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty, except for one man still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone, all alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and biting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. Shaking earthquakes of doubt and remorse assail him, impale him with monster truck force. In his mind he's still driving, still making the grade. She's hoping in time that her memories will fade. Cause he's racing,
welcome back,
and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding.
Chuck Missler, you know, again, trying to tie things together real quick, yesterday's broadcast along with these stories and the spirit of the season, so to speak. Chuck Missler talked about the, among other things, the connection to God basically being the present. And, you know, I think during that, when he talked about that, he even mentioned, you know, that's why we call it the present. It's a present. And I think the way that he couched it, Einstein said that the past and the future are just stubbornly persistent illusions. And it's easy to get wrapped up, caught up, captivated, enraptured, whatever, with these kinds of things, especially the future. And, you know, that's part of this other stuff that I was talking about yesterday, the dialectical process, you know, a painting or casting of the future as an inevitability, a foregone conclusion. It's easy to get caught up in those things. And so it reminds me of the excerpt from Richard N. Gardner's piece, The Hard Road to World Order. I was talking about the busyness of life, you know, and there's more of this all the time. And communitarianism is that, you know, decentralized, disorderly, and pragmatic process of inventing and adapting institutions of limited jurisdiction and selected membership to deal with specific problems on a case-by-case basis as the necessity for cooperation is perceived by the relevant nations. That, to me, again, I mean, I mentioned the Strong Cities Network as a, an emblematic example of that. And, you know, so Gardner wrote, such institutions of limited jurisdiction will have a better chance of doing what must be done to make a rule of law possible among nations, providing methods of change, changing the law and enforcing it as it changes, and developing the perception of common interests that is the prerequisite for successful cooperation. And again, this belies the cybernetic agenda of making sure that control is built in. But here is the operative quote. Gardner wrote, in short, the House of World Order, quote unquote, will have to be built from the bottom up rather than from the top down. It will look like a great booming, buzzing confusion, quote unquote, to use William James' famous description of reality. But an end run around national sovereignty, eroding it piece by piece, will accomplish much more than the old-fashioned frontal assault. And so, I mean, we see a lot of that sort of busyness these days. And the, again, the communitarian policy manual employs the reflexive technique that I think is spoken of by Gardner back in 1974. You know, you reflexively install the bars or those pieces of fence, you know, in the Okefenokee Swamp example. Reflexively, they're going over here, a little piece of fence over here. Now they're moving over here, a little piece of fence over here. All the while, having them believe, you know, developing the perception of common interests that is the prerequisite for successful cooperation. Now we have to do this. It'd be better if we could have some of the pigs putting the fence up for us, you know, and tell them that it's for their good. And when the other pigs resist, you know, that's obviously they're going to do that. And, you know, you just mind control everybody. That's the stuff that we're trying to speak against in the next few days' broadcasts, hopefully in general, but admittedly I have a tendency to focus on this stuff. And a couple other things I was going to mention, for whatever it's worth, I mentioned the Justia law resource, and you can go there. I don't know if the administrative fourth branch entry is still there. Administrative law, I think, is what it was titled. But there are several cases that cite the peculiar phrase of a headless fourth branch, characterized as a fourth branch of government. So, what it's worth, maybe I'll mention that when we come back and we'll go to the phones. Be right back.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Many people write us about their experience with Extendivite. Allow me to read you some from Amazon.com. It really does work like the review says it does. I cannot believe that after the first few days, I didn't feel as sluggish or clogged up. It has had a profound impact on my physical, emotional well-being. I'm skeptical as most people about products and their claims, and I never write reviews, but this is a wonderful product and I recommend it to everyone. Great product. It has brought my blood pressure from the mid-150s over the 80s to the mid-130s over mid-80s. Along with diet and exercise in just the past couple of months. Excellent. Thank you, David. Tell us your story. Get Extendivite today. Call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Birds flying high, you know how I feel. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea, you know how I feel. River running free, you know how I feel. Blossom on a tree, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life.
Welcome back.
For me.
Bottom of the third hour of today's Road Warrior Radio broadcast, this Tuesday, December 17th, 2019. Just to kind of conclude that thought, the Gestia Law, or the law resource Gestia.com, I used to mention years ago that they had an entry. The section was titled Administrative Law. I think it's the same section now, but it's been massaged. Very seriously massaged. It used to say what I said, I think I said yesterday, most people think that Congress makes the laws, Supreme Court interprets the laws, the White House or the executive enforces the laws, but that it's not quite that simple. And, you know, you keep reading and it literally described administrative agencies as being having the power to do all three. Make, interpret, and enforce the laws. Now it's kinder, gentler language. There's the part about the Administrative Procedure Act, and you know, Congress and the executive can create executive or independent and executive agencies, respectively. But it's still interesting that you can find a number of entries that speak to the fourth branch discussion. There are Just a few entries. American Beauty Homes Corporation versus Louisville, etc. 379 SW 2nd 450. That's 1964 case. It says the fourth note, fourth footnote, see Administrative Procedure Law in Kentucky, Research Report Number 12, 1962. Legislative Research Commission, an administrative agency, has been realistically characterized as a fourth branch of government. See Report of Hoover Commission, March 1949, Regulatory Commissions, page 2. O'Connor, Policing the Administrative Process, 1957, 43 ABA Journal, 923. So that's one entry. Emeron Inc. and United States Senate intervener Thomas P. O'Neill, Speaker of the House, and Bipartisan Leadership Group, etc. Anyway, this is a 787 F. 2nd 875. This is 1986 case, and says we adopt the reasoning of the court in Brookfield Construction that the GAO is best viewed as a part of a headless fourth branch, quote unquote, of government, consisting of independent agencies having significant duties in both the legislative and executive branches, but residing not entirely within either. Well, that's interesting. What's that all about? Skipping down, although a legislative officer may not be given executive duties, many executive or fourth branch officers permitted perform mixed duties and therefore function in dual capacities. As the Supreme Court noted in Springer v. Philippine Islands, 277 U.S. 189. And there are just more entries in the same case. GAO is best viewed as part of a headless fourth branch of the government. Therefore follows that there can be no fourth branch, headless or otherwise. Anyway, it's a point of discussion. That's one case. FCC in another case cited as the headless fourth branch of government, and many other examples. Nevada Industrial Commission v. Reese. These are all, you can find these on just a search on Justia. General Assembly of State of New Jersey versus Byrne, 90 NJ 376, 1982. And some observers describe administrative agencies as a fourth branch of government. Administrative agencies are an aspect of American government that has dramatically altered the scheme envisioned by the framers of our Constitution. Faced with increasingly complex social and economic problems, see, that's the key. Legislators have focused their efforts upon making broad policy determinations, delegating to executive agencies extensive power to implement those policies through rules and quasi-judicial proceedings. See, there's the final branch. It's the executive, legislative, and quasi-judicial proceedings, which is also an administrative agency function. Some observers describe administrative agencies as a fourth branch of government. So the point is, in trying to tie yesterday and today together specifically, this busyness is not an accident. And so we are consumed. I mentioned Thomas Jefferson to Samuel Kercheval yesterday, and people being so busy that I have to work 16 hours in the 24, give 15 of those, their earnings of 15 of those to the government, having not sufficient funds to, you know, support themselves and their family, et cetera, et cetera. This is not a new concern. It's not a new problem. And so, you know, it's something, if nothing else, should be of some comfort that this is not an accident, although that doesn't change things in life, you know, it'd be nice, I guess, to bring the two together, yesterday's broadcast and today, to really sort of sum it up. I think it would be nice if we could somehow, I think the challenge is to keep in mind the spirit of the season while speaking to the reality that this is not by accident. How can we do that gently? And who knows? Maybe that changes things. To the phones, back to the phones we go. Myrn, Wisconsin, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yep. Good morning.
Morning. I posted in the chat room and I sent to you a speech on religious liberty and its morality, too. William Barr gave a couple months ago at Notre Dame in South Bend, Indiana, for the Federalist Society, and all those sound bad. But, you know, I'd heard it a couple times, and I was letting an amazing Polly bit shoot just kind of roll. And she had one. It was a little canned sounding. I think she was getting some changes in her equipment and everything. But I really listened to it again. And I couldn't help but think of your progeny, your son, your grandson, your great-grandson, much like you refer back to former times and what they said, if they wouldn't be pointing back to this. Because it's very very relevant. And, you know, whether Catholic or whatever, it's really Jesus Christ. And that's the difference, Christ or Antichrist. But they have a strong family. Now, some people look at that and say, oh, well, they're, you know, dependent on the government, you know, because they work. But if they're going to have somebody working in the government, shouldn't it be somebody that has some morals and family values and believes in Christ? I mean, you know, I know it's not perfect. There was only one perfect. But I couldn't help but think I should call you and tell you. I can just see your future generations referring back like you referring back to our present, which is a gift, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoy all you do. It's so deep. Pretty amazing.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to do my part to hopefully improve the quality of life for all of us here in this society and those whose lives we touch beyond our shores, so to speak, and not to be ignorant of the past, but, you know, hopefully learn from it. You're one of the folks that, you know, mentions the past. We talk about the past from time to time in our own troubled past here in America. So I think we could learn from those things and do better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was a little local station here played stories from back in 1700s, you know, and everything would snow over and they didn't have scrapers, you know, they'd go out in their sleds. Mm-hmm. And still traveled to each other's homes, and it described how tight and cozy the little homes were, you know, go and spend a day or two, you know, and travel back in the... And it's very interesting, and the Amish still do a lot of that. So, and we may be doing a lot of that again. And it's not a bad thing. I know Ken, the board op there, said, I don't know who show was he was saying it on, I think maybe Robert Revolt's, but maybe an EMP wouldn't be such a bad thing. You know, because all this Bitcoin and all the rest of it, and the technology, where's it going to be without electricity? They're dependent on that, so.
Well, you know, and again, it's interesting, the lessons of history that we forget. I mean, I've mentioned recently Jordan Peterson's point about how what a miracle so many of these things are. You know, it gives us the capability to do things, and we take so much for granted. And maybe it's not a miracle, you know, as some folks have conjectured. Maybe it's not. You think about, I mean, you know, electricity, yeah, but what about the refrigerator? what an incredible thing that is, and how that just changes everyone's daily life. You know, how it
yeah.
allows us to not even really think about certain things. Speaking of the self-preservation instinct or awareness of danger, you know, if you don't have a refrigerator, then suddenly those conversations take on a whole new nature, I think.
My first winter here, I had no refrigerator, but there's a little leak by the back door where cold air, you know, I put stripping and stuff around, but it was still, so I put anything that needed to be refrigerated all around that and then covered it over. So, and sometimes I'd put things outside in a cooler or even just in a box if it wasn't too cold, you know, so they didn't freeze solid, but, You know, there again, the Amish and the people that live close to the earth, we can remember a lot of their things, you know. Like you were saying about the Creech, and it'd be fun to have wooden toys again. I remember the first time going in a Toys R Us that it just seemed obscene. You know, here's this, you know, just a glut of, it was like you wanted to hold on to your child real tight. There's this big cavernous warehouse of, you know, what's lurking around the corner with all this bait, you know, kind of thing. It's just very strange, I remember. And it was nice to be able to get the board games and things. But then when, if you look at the board games, you see what they're trying to teach, too. You know, so I interrupted you. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I think, you know, like I said, I'm going to try to hold to the less cynical during these next few days. I'm going to try, and admittedly, it's difficult, but I'm going to make an effort to do that. So we'll see. And hopefully it makes a difference.
Yeah, let me add a couple other things then, because I really like it here. And it's very humbling in Bruegel. And as things get really cold and things get really broken down, because I live in a marvelous Marshfield Manor home, circa 1970s. And the plumbing's been gone now for a few years. But I do have a pipe coming in from the well. So I can bucket flush. I'm still inside doing that, so that's a good thing, right? And I have my snowshoes. I get snowed in the winter, and they're kind of like a native-made thing, and I love them. You know, so I go out and take a cruise over the crests of the drifts and, you know, to get out and just to walk around. And it's in any season, in every season, it's very uplifting. You know, there's no symbols. There's no traffic. You know, I had a bunch of little old kitty cats that were brought out here to spend the rest of their days, and one of them lived to be 24 years old. And this fellow here, he was a wild cat and adopted me, and he's probably 12 years old now. I figured he was about 2 years old. He was casing the joint for a while around the edges and come around by the campfire and before he adopted me. So,
right, but,
you know, it's fun. You don't realize how much fun it really is to just you get used to anything, and it's fun to get used to good things that are just natural. I don't know. Yeah, you got to go to a break, or you got
to
call.
Actually, we need to grab another call. So,
okay, thank you, Chris. Bye bye. Yeah.
You bet. Thanks, Mer. Much appreciated. Yes, I wish you know, we could define terms. Getting used to the good things. Let's define what good things are, and probably in contravention to some of the propaganda that floats around. Again, I'm going to try to resist that, you know, tractor beam of cynicism. Back to the phones. Rich in Washington, thanks for calling. Welcome.
Yeah, this is going to piggyback on the last caller. Basically, her pleasures and her existence was based on interaction with nature. And basically being closer to nature, she had a larger way to evaluate what was happening around her, and it wasn't tied up in just human interaction. And because of that, I'd like to bring up two concepts to kind of expand what we're considering. The first one is man can be in two states. He can be tribal, and if he's tribal, basically everybody looks each other in the eye, and the government is the decision of all the people, and they all support it because they're a small body. They've all made the decision, and they're really concerned with the existence, the long-term existence of the tribe. So not only do they have to protect themselves, but they have to protect the nature around them and all the other considerations that come into their vote. Well, once a population becomes larger and loses that capacity, we can also function as a herd animal. When we function as a herd animal, we have a whole different perspective. Basically, we want to just all get together and protect each other by being in the herd. But the main thing is we have an alpha leader, and we look to that alpha leader for all kinds of decision-making that we're not willing to make. So we give up the responsibility, and we pass that responsibility onto the herd, or onto the alpha, right or wrong. Well, if you look at history, basically what the Romans did at the middle of their dynasty is they destroyed all the Hebrews, the Jews, and having destroyed those, they took over their religion and changed everything from a polytheistic to a monotheistic perspective. And we've been in that perspective. We are Roman now. Our laws are Roman. Our concepts are Roman. And our overriding belief is Roman also. And I've read the book called The Field by Lynn McTaggart. And basically what she points out is we're limited with three or four, we've got five to six senses that we deal with, so that's limited, and we have three to four dimensions that we deal with, even though there's probably, theoretically, by mathematics, there's a infinite number of both, meaning that basically our concepts are reduced to almost none. Basically, it's like looking through a microscope to study the moon's surface. So we're trying to deal with this very little input and very little understanding, and we structure everything with the understanding that this is all we have, and we have to deal with this situation. My belief on the field is that and we don't really even understand it yet, that quantum understanding means that everything is interactive. We just don't see the interaction. And so my suggestion or possible way of looking at things in a different way is our concept of the fact that there's this ultimate alpha male, this God, who's all-powerful, all-knowledgeable, and all-present, is that a concept that we've used to mediate our uneasiness with the fact that we have very little understanding of what's happening around us? And there's a book called Supernatural, which says humans are tied to the supernatural because it gives them a kind of way to deal with the fact that they understand they're going to die. And I'm just wondering if that a lot of the decisions, how we look at the world isn't based on this fact that we have to deal with almost no real input, and we have to make decisions based on that lack of knowledge.
No, that if you're asking me the question or if it's rhetorical, I don't know. But, the title, by the way, book title Supernatural, that's a number of books. I don't know which book you're talking about, but the complete title of Lynn McTaggart's book is The Field, The Quest for the Secret Force of the Universe.
Right.
And that, to me, that speaks to a certain, I don't know, perspective, and one that I don't share. I think the ultimate alpha is the alpha and omega the Bible speaks of, and that's my perspective. And I don't think it's, I think, a lot of that kind of stuff that you're referring to is along the same lines, albeit not specifically of a political nature, you might say, but very similar to what Richard N. Gardner was talking about in The Hard Road to World Order. It's the same great booming, buzzing confusion that William James referred to. And so I don't think it's that mystical. To me, in my perspective, it's much more simple and biblically oriented, but that's my perspective. So,
right. Well, the Supernatural I'm talking about has a subtitle, and it's just a recent book talking about death, the concept of how death influences our understanding of the supernatural. So it's a recent book, not readily available unless you've got a really updated library or bookstore or whatever. But yeah, that's my point. Basically, if we choose this ultimate alpha male that is essentially in our understanding perfection, doesn't that restrict how we see the world and limit how we view our place in the world?
That's you know, that's a question. These kinds of things at the end of the broadcast, you know, I would say, in my view, it does restrict in the same way that, you know, when a child, 2 years old, 2 years old, is informed what the boundaries of life are, in the same kind of way. Yeah, it sure, it restricts in certain ways, but same way that healthy boundaries do for a child. That's my take on that.
Well, that
there are certain healthy boundaries that we should observe.
Yeah, that's a great analogy, but then what you're admitting is that we're accepting these boundaries even though they're artificial. And if we do that, does that limit our ability to deal with, as you called it, the busyness of the quote-unquote intervening governmental choices? And that's what seems to me happening, is we're stuck with the government we have because we all choose to believe that's the ultimate way that people can live their lives. And it seems to me, having dealt with the history of the whole thing, that this is what the Roman psyop was, to get us all to be considered slaves, but make it so attractive that we wanted to be slave and participated in the slavery as if we were free.
Well, that's, you know, something to unpack, obviously not now or at the end of the broadcast, so unfortunately can't really speak to that right now.
Yeah, but just a concept, something to think about.
Yeah, I appreciate your call,
RBN, Rich. Says it seeks the truth, and I'm not sure they're willing to get out of their agenda.
Well, no one tells me what to talk about on this network, so I'm not sure what that agenda might be, but I appreciate your call, and I respect your perspective, and that'll do it for today's broadcast, folks. I hope it was informative. As always, it truly is an honor and a pleasure. Take care. God bless. We'll catch you on the other side.
Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.